Northwest Prime, bringing Seattle to the world and the world to Seattle. Follow us on Twitter at iGuestInfo. Send us your questions and we'll try to answer. Now enjoy the show.
All right, well, welcome back to another show for Northwest Prime, where we'll bring in nice people to you so we can talk about good things going on in Seattle and around the world. My guest today is no stranger to the Seattle area at all, and I hope that you'll get to know and follow Greg as well. Greg Roth is the founder of Seattle Music Insider. He knows everything about everything that's going on with the Seattle music scene and outside the Seattle music scene. So I'm going to just bring Greg straight in so we can just get with it. Greg's a friend of mine. I've kind of been following Greg around now for the past year in the Seattle music scene. Everybody likes Greg. I mean, he's just a great guy. So anyway, Greg, thanks for coming on. We'll just get right to it.
Hey, Lori, how you doing?
I am doing great. I'm so excited about this show with you.
I'm excited to be here. It was great seeing you at the Play It Forward show a few weeks ago, and that was a great show, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. You know, in fact, I wanted to talk to you today about that Casper Coverley who was there, that 12-year-old kid who just really brought the house down with his guitar playing. That was just amazing.
Yeah, a 12-year-old kid with the soul of a 40- to 50-year-old bluesman. Amazing.
Absolutely. It is amazing.
Really great. Yeah.
12.
Yeah. 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 I mean, the thing about him is he's got great chops, obviously. So he's done his work. You know, he's put in his time. But what's truly brilliant about him is his soul that comes through in his playing. And that's something you don't learn. I mean, he just plays like with the maturity and the spirit of somebody that's been doing it for several years. I mean, several decades.
Mm-hmm,
so that's what's most impressive about him to me, and just a great kid too, just a really humble and sweet kid, and his parents are lovely as well. So,
when I was 12 years old, I was eating Twinkies and waiting for my Tiger Beat to come in the mail. I mean, that was like the scope of my, you know, my existence in my brain.
Yeah.
he's
definitely put in the work.
Have you interviewed him?
I have not, but I'm going to definitely interview him. I mean, I've chatted with him several times, and I even told his mom I'm waiting for a particular event that he's going to be participating in, so it should be happening, you know, rather soon, sooner than later.
Well, I have him coming on the show on the 18th.
Nice.
With Randy Hansen. In fact, Randy was the one who set it up, because Randy, I guess, is trying to get him to go on the road with him and be part of his European tour.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Randy's a great cat. I mean, amazing guitarist, obviously. And it's funny, folks that aren't from the Seattle area, Randy Hansen is considered maybe the top Hendrix tribute artist and is endorsed by the actual Hendrix family. He's absolutely brilliant. But he's also, with his own material, aside from the Hendrix stuff, he's a real creative and brilliant musician with his own material as well.
Well, didn't he compose part of the Apocalypse Now soundtrack?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, he's something else. And he's, again, one of the nicest guys you'll meet.
Well, we like nice people.
Yes, we
do. because mean people.
And you're a nice person, Lori, too. So I like you.
Well, thank you. You know, actually, I am a nice person.
You are.
Sometimes that's to my detriment, but I'm trying to turn that into a positive thing, because I've always
right.
kind of been seen as like the nice person, and that's kind of been a negative, more weak or sensitive or, you know, there was always kind of a negative connotation with being nice. And so what I want to do now is I want to turn that into a positive, because I've tried to be stronger tougher. I can't pull it off. So, you know, this is what I am, and I'm going to have to learn how to deal with it.
You know, you can be nice and still be strong and tough.
Well,
you can be nice
guess.
And still strong. Yeah, you can. It's possible.
Well, I'll try. I will try harder. Well, let's start at the beginning, Greg.
Sure.
How did you come to found Seattle Music Insider?
Well, I've been a musician pretty much most of my life, and I come from a family of musicians. My brothers are musicians. My grandparents were musicians. So music's been part of my life, my whole life. I mean, from the first time I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, it's been important. I've performed, I've recorded my own stuff. So I definitely, you know, can approach it from an inside perspective. I love to write. I love photography, and I always loved radio. So originally I was covering professional soccer, the Seattle Sounders, and I was doing that, and that was fun, and I love soccer. But sports, as great as it is, and I still love it, it's very disposable. Once a match is over, it's done, and then nobody cares. With music, you cover something, and it has a shelf life. There's a lot of evergreen material, and music is really my passion. It's my happy place. So I wanted to kind of take some of the stuff that I was doing in covering soccer and really kind of parlay it to covering music. And Seattle Music Insider, as a brand, was initially a Facebook page. I was writing for Examiner.com, and Facebook was kind of what I used to promote, you know, my articles. And then I decided I'd always loved radio, and I've always loved to interview people. And my day gig, I'm a recruiter, so I've interviewed people for corporations. I worked for Microsoft for several years, interviewing people to come work for Microsoft. So interviewing is natural to me, and I have an innate curiosity with why people do what they do, why musicians do what they do, what inspires them, et cetera. And also, when I was a musician, I used to love to sit. We'd sit after practice, and we would just talk about music, and we'd geek out on music, and we'd talk about this record and that record and who played on whose record and, you know, have you heard this cat? He's amazing, blah, blah, blah. And so it's natural to me. So kind of taking things, some of my professional experience and what I'm passionate about, and being able to channel it in a direction. So 3 years ago, I started a podcast called SMI Radio, and it was really rough. And it's still, you know, continuing to evolve. And I was still writing for Examiner, and I decided I needed a web page to kind of have one place where I could have my content and my brand. So originally, Seattle Music Insider launched the website, launched 3 years ago, along with the podcast, and it was just me. Like Seattle Music Insider was me, but I didn't really want to be Seattle Music Insider. I'm not Seattle Music Insider. We're all Seattle Music Insiders in a sense. Anybody that goes in and gets in and goes out and sees music and what's happening. But anyway, I it was always my vision to have just one place to kind of house all my content and have one place that people could go to hear my podcast, to get my, you know, my Facebook, my Twitter, to read some of my articles, you know, my commentary, whatever. And then also Seattle Music Insider has a double meaning, because it's not about necessarily being inside the scene. We all are in a sense, but it's really two things. It's, we all have this passion of music inside us, right? Which is why we do what we do. So it's Seattle Music Insider is the passion of music that lives inside us. And number two, being a musician, being somebody who's actually performed on stage, you know, and recorded and produced my own music, when I interview or write an article on an artist, I can approach it from the perspective from the inside out as opposed to the outside in. Because a lot of journalists, they sit on the outside, they look in, they ask questions, and they analyze. I do the opposite. I actually approach it from an insider's perspective, somebody who's actually written music. So I can kind of speak the language. I know what it's like to sit in a recording studio. I know what it's like to perform in front of thousands of fans. I've done that. And I know what it's like to record on other people's projects. So that's really kind of what we do. Now, since then, Seattle Music Insider has expanded. I have probably between 9 to 10 photographers out there shooting different shows and 9 to 10 different writers. We have managing editor Jennifer Austin. So now we're actually a new site. We're picked up on Google News. And so we try to cover as much stuff as we can and as many genres as we can, including jazz, including metal, including funk, R&B, and, of course, the indie stuff and some of the mainstream stuff. And then I have my weekly radio show that's on several internet stations called SMI Radio, and it's a like a magazine show that features interviews and music from various artists, whether they be local, national, or global. And we cover everything from local artists, up and coming emerging artists, to 80s classic artists such as Thomas Dolby and Bananarama, and some of the 60s or 70s classic artists such as John Anderson from Yes, I've had on, and Alan White, our friend, who you've had on, and because this scene in Seattle isn't just one thing. It's not just rock. It's not just
right.
It's not just hipster indie music. It's everything. And there's a lot of cats that live up here that have done some incredible things, like Lee Oscar and Michael Shreve and Alan White and John Popper from Blues Traveler. Cats like that, as well as some really great emerging artists like Alan Stone and Macklemore and Pickwick and Deep Sea Diver and those cats. So we're not just a rock town. We have a lot to offer in a lot of different genres, and so that's what we try to do at Seattle Music Insider, is cover all the different things happening in the city, and also the people that cover the scene, such as yourself or other journalists, they're part of the story too. So we cover them, and we talk about them, and we talk about industry stuff. So anything that pertains to music in this region, we do our best to try to cover it as much as we can.
Well, I'm really just new to the Seattle music scene. I moved up from Los Angeles, and I was heavily involved in the Los Angeles music scene. And when I moved up to the Pacific Northwest, I probably thought, like maybe a lot of other people did, and that there was, I really didn't understand that there was any Seattle music scene. I was still thinking kind of grunge, or, I really didn't know what was going on in Seattle. And so once I did, and I didn't even want to be back in radio again when I came to the Pacific Northwest, because radio is hard work. I don't think people understand that. You work really hard in radio. And so I just really wasn't, I just didn't want to go down that path again. But I really like people, and I like people's stories. And my ability is, I'm not a great musician. I love music, and I have always been the person who listens to music and then hacks on my own guitar some music. But I have an ability to find commonality with everybody, that just anyone, rich, poor, black, white, yellow, or it doesn't matter. I can find commonality with people. So when I got involved in the music scene in Seattle, I started feeling this commonality human to human, and that kind of evolved into what you were saying, all of this different music, all of these great people, all of these wonderful stories, all these kids who were trying their hardest to live their passion. I mean, it was so alive. It was more alive than it was, obviously, in Los Angeles, because in Los Angeles it was more, I didn't feel the sense of community, I don't think. It was more,
that's more
about
of a business town.
Right. It was more business and then just trying to get the exposure fast and quick. But in Seattle, there's a whole community of people helping people, other artists, going to other artists' shows to hear what they're doing and support them. It was just crazy. And that's kind of what sucked me back into radio, and then wanting to get that message out to people across, you know, the United States and really across the world, because I do feel like a lot of people are really looking at Seattle right now. There's a lot of emphasis. People are really interested in what's going on in Seattle. And it was that network of people like you, like Mark and Linda Gordon, and just so many people that were really trying to make a difference in music in Seattle, and everybody was helping each other, and that's kind of what I bought into. And it was just one nice person after another. Andrew Joslin, fantastic guy. Jeffrey Brown, Chris Orlowski, all of these guys. It was just, and you want them all to succeed. Ryan Griffin from Sea of Misinformation, the Silver Bullet Band. I mean, just went on and on and on, and we could cover this stuff all day long. So I can totally see why you found your passion there.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, you just nailed it. And what it is for me, it is about community. If it wasn't about that, it probably wouldn't be interesting to me. I also lived in Los Angeles for 14 years, so I worked around the music business down there. So I know how it is down there. And that's the one thing that's special here, is there is this sense of community. And yes, it's fragmented sometimes, but I think it's coming closer and closer together. And I think the different pockets are starting to interface a little more. I mean, it does sometimes get a little clicky, but I think one of the things that I want to do, at least in some small way with Seattle Music Insider, is kind of help bridge those gaps. And The interesting thing about Seattle is you talk to people outside of Seattle. And I was just talking to somebody, one of our new partners in the UK, and we are perceived as one of the top music cities in the world. We are like Austin. We are like New Orleans. We're like Memphis and Nashville. There's a lot happening here. And I think what is really cool, what's happening here, is it's not just rock and roll. It's not just it's not just grunge. It's everything. And here's an interesting thing to note. So back in December, the day that Hart was notified that they were going to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the same day, Macklemore is on the Jimmy Fallon show on the East Coast. On the West Coast, Alan Stone is playing the Jay Leno show the same day that Hart, who helped put Seattle on the map after Hendrix, was inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's pretty incredible. And there's some bands this year that I think are going to break out that are going to continue to put Seattle on the map. And it was a great year last year. And I think this year there's some other bands on top of what's already out there that are going to really, I think, do some great things this year.
Well, let's listen to The Fold. That's one of the songs that you sent over. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this up-and-coming? This is Ivan and...
Ivan and Alyosha, yeah.
Alyosha.
Ivan and Alyosha is out on tour right now, and I believe they're going to be at South by Southwest, but they put on an amazing show 2 weeks ago at the Showbox at the Market, and they are a band that almost defies categorization. They're very Beatles-influenced. They've been influenced from the likes of the Beatles, Tom Jones, Harry Belafonte, and incredible harmonies, incredible musicianship, and they just put out a brand new record, and this is probably the track that we're going to hear is probably one of my favorite songs, and they performed it live, and it was absolutely brilliant. But I think Ivan and Alyosha is going to have a big year this year. I think they're going to break out nationally.
All right, well, this is called The Fold, and we will be back in a couple minutes. We'll let you guys listen to it and see what you decide, and Greg and I will be right back. I'm just going to come right back in with...
Isn't that a great song, man? I love that,
song. That is a great song. It is a great song. I meant to fade it out, but I kind of got ahead of myself and
I just turned it off.
You know, I've been hearing a lot about them, so I'm really glad that you sent that song over and we can kind of listen to it, and then you can kind of talk about them just a little bit, because they are making a lot of, you know, they're getting a lot of buzz about them.
Yeah. Indeed.
So I want to talk about, Greg and I were talking a little bit while we were off air a minute ago about the Seattle music scene, and my observation as an outsider coming in was that if you're just coming to Seattle as a tourist, it's kind of hard to find where the music is. If you're in Seattle, it's pretty common knowledge. And it's easy to find where all these venues are. In fact, the one, the Showbox that Greg was talking about earlier at the market, that's right down at Pike Market. That one's easy to find. But if you're a tourist coming in, and I'm on the light rail a lot, and so I love to ride the light rail. That's just something about me. I don't know what it is about the light rail. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just fascinating to me. Not in an NCIS, like, murder investigation way, but in a, like, America's Home Video kind of funny way. But there's a lot of tourists on the light rail, and they're always asking, where do we go? What do we do? What's hot? What, you know, so, and they're trying to find their way, but they don't really know. And of course, if you're a tourist, there's also that little bit of, you know, I mean, we all hear horror stories about tourists getting off on the wrong stop, and then they get robbed or they get killed or whatever. So, you know, everybody has a little apprehension in them as far as wandering outside the bounds a little bit.
Yeah.
And so in Nashville, they have, you know, Music Row. In L.A., they have Sunset Strip. In Austin, we're going to talk about here in a little bit, South by Southwest. You know, they have a kind of a designated area in Seattle, kind of spread out. So if you're just coming in, you know, it's kind of hard to know.
Right. There used to be, like, Pioneer Square back in the day, back in the grunge days, you could buy – all the clubs had a deal where you could buy one – wristband, and then you could get into all the different clubs there. But it got to be really dangerous, and a lot of the clubs went out of business. Like Doc Maynard's is no longer there, so that was there was kind of a scene down there. But you're right. There's no real central scene. I mean, there's some pockets, like up in Capitol Hill. There's some cool clubs up there. Like there's Numo's and the Comet Tavern and a few others. And then, you know, down in Seattle by the Pike Place Market, you've got the Triple Door, which is one of my favorite venues, and then the Showbox, and then Showbox Soto's over in South downtown Seattle, and then you have, you know, some other clubs over in Ballard and Fremont, like the Tractor and places like that, or the Nectar Lounge, and they're all kind of spread out. And it would be really cool if you did have a place, you know, kind of like New Orleans, like Bourbon Street or Austin or Memphis, where there was one place where, man, all the clubs were right there. And it's a shame because all the clubs collectively are all really cool places. It's just they're all kind of spread out.
Right. Well, on the light rail, it will take you from where all the hotels are, kind of around SeaTac near the airport, and you can ride the light rail all the way down to Pike Market, okay? And you can just get off at Pike Market right there, you know? And it stops a lot of different places along the way, but where everyone's going, basically, is Pike Market, okay? That's where all the tourists are going.
Oh, yeah.
So when I ride the light rail... Yeah, they all want to see the Space Needle, and they want to, you know, there's just so many great things, but it's easy for them to get on there at SeaTac and then ride all the way down to Pike Market. And they have money to spend, and they want to spend it. When I'm on the light rail, they're always asking me. I mean, they are just, you know, where can we go? What can we do? But if you kind of tell them somewhere, you know, it's kind of off the beaten path, their eyes kind of glaze over. You know, it happens every time. It's just like clockwork. Right. You know, like, oh, I don't know. You know, that's getting complicated. You know, and when you're – and it's whoever you are, you don't want complicated when you're on vacation. But
no,
the great thing about
Pike
is you also have all of the cruise ships letting off right there. See, to me, it's a missed opportunity. You got all those cruise ships coming in month after month, thousands of people from all over the planet getting off. You know, the light rail stopping right there. I mean, if I had the money, I'd just open a joint right there and just take all their money and give them great, great music.
Yeah. But it's probably really expensive, too. You know, I mean, it's not cheap to open a club. I mean, I don't think, with the taxes and the parking, what it costs to park, it's not honestly, it's not the most friendly city for opening up a music club. It would be, it's not a business I'd want to get into in terms of if I want to make
right.
money.
That's true. The parking's horrible.
I mean, because if you go out, and I do go out and cover a lot of shows, and there's some great venues, but here's the downside. If I want to go cover a show, it's not just the show. It's the parking could be, depending on where you park, it could be $20. I mean, parking in some cases, you know, I get into shows for free, basically, because I cover them as press. My parking's more expensive than the show, but it does end up being a very expensive kind of thing. Now, the folks that live in the city, you know, there's taxi cabs and there's buses and everything else, so that's cool. But I think for people coming outside the city, it's not necessarily conducive, you know, to that. The infrastructure is not conducive to it. But the thing is you've got some amazing venues. I mean, right across the street from the Triple Door is Benaroya Hall, you know, and so there's some really cool things and places, but they're all a bit scattered.
Well, that's why I like what you're doing and then what my little show does and then what other people are doing too. Is like if you can't get into that kind of congestion, you know, area of downtown Seattle, you can still hear the music. We can still let you know about artists who are making a difference and who are on their way up. Because, I mean, just like you're saying this year, Macklemore, Alan Stone, all of these guys coming right out of Seattle, they didn't even have a record label behind them, and they were to make it. That was Woodman's put so great about them. Of course, I'm sure now that they have the machine behind them, but before they didn't, they actually made it before they had the machine behind them, which is almost unimaginable.
Well, it's really kind of a buzz and word of mouth, and with the internet and YouTube and all these other, you know, mediums, you don't need necessarily a machine behind you. I mean, obviously the distribution is nice, but people will discover music without having to buy a record. I mean, my wife's kids, they don't listen to mainstream radio. They get their music on YouTube. And, you know, a friend hears a song they really like and sends a YouTube video, and then it goes viral. Now, the thing about Macklemore and Alan Stone is Alan turned down, I think he got four different offers on major labels, and Macklemore did too, because basically they wanted them to sign these ridiculous 360 deals where the artist ends up getting, you know, the short end of the stick. And, you know, aside from distribution, an artist doesn't necessarily need a big label to build their audience. I think the way Alan Stone has done it, and Macklemore has been around for a while. So, you know, the world's finding out what we've known for a long time, and the same thing with Alan. But my whole mantra is slow, steady, sustainable growth. The industry, the way it's set up now, it's now. We want it now, and if you don't sell X amount of records and you don't make an impact now, you're done. I think the artists, when we were growing up, record companies brought an artist up slowly, they developed them, and they looked at it as a long-term, short, medium, and long-term strategy. And I think if you're an independent artist, you can do that. If you're a major and you don't make an impact right away, you're done. And that's it.
The music scene has changed for the label, and I think the label has been caught a little off guard with this whole revolution. Because I talked about this before. I always hate to say back in the olden days when I was in radio. exactly. You know, the artists would come in and they would have their demo and you could talk to the DJ and they could hand it off to us and we would listen to it, we'd talk about it, we'd play it, we'd spin it, whatever. But then in the 90s, there was this huge transformation. The label started buying out radio, really, and the doors were locked up, we were given playlists. And, you know, those days of Wolfman Jack finding talent or, you know, the DJs who discovered people, Elvis or whatever, you know, those days were gone. You went off a strict list of what you were to play, and you played the heck out of it. I mean, you might have only played 9 or 10 songs, you know, through your set.
Right.
And it was the same thing, and it would be one-hit wonders. You know, if those people didn't have a follow-up on it, they were just gone. I mean, I know so many people who I believe had talent, and, you know, they just didn't really get that great follow-up, and they were gone. The great thing that's happened now is that the artist kind of has more power, like you were saying, through YouTube, through through social media that the consumer can hear that, and then they can choose themselves. It's not being forced fed to them. They can choose. And then I also like, which I know the artist kind of doesn't like, but back in the day, you had to buy the whole album. And then, you know, you got the one good song, and then maybe the rest of them weren't that great, but you had to buy the whole album. I do like, and I know this is the artist, you know, really don't like this, but from a consumer standpoint, I really do like designing kind of your own playlist. You know, you go in and you buy and you pick and choose. Although I will say that sometimes you miss some of the good stuff, because on those albums there was some classics that, you know, that you did end up listening to, and I guess you might not do that with the whole design your own playlist thing, but from a consumer standpoint, it's a good time for the consumer as well, because there's more power back in the consumer's hands. The label is off balance at this point, and the artist is able to make some big inroads right now. Now's the time, you know, for stuff to happen.
Well, here's the thing. There's two things. Back in the day, you know, an artist that you love put out a record, you wanted everything that you could get their hands on they put out, even if it was a B-side. And so so if you really dug an artist, you wanted the whole album. You wanted everything they were doing. And nowadays, people tend to want to gravitate toward the singles, and they miss out on a lot of stuff because there's certain types of music that doesn't necessarily grab you right off the top. It grows on you. Now, the thing about the industry, let's talk about that, because here's the thing, is that the artist is much more empowered now. They have technology and tools to be able to get their music out, promote their music, et cetera. But here's the downside. You have a lot more stuff going into the pipe, going through the pipe now, and a lot of it, because anybody can put a record out. So the challenge is, what should I listen to as a listener? Because there's so much out there. The role that radio played and television to an extent, they were curators. They didn't necessarily say, this is what you should listen to, and I'm the ultimate authority. But they had, if you had somebody that had a good ear and it knew what they were, knew their stuff, you trusted them as a source, as a curator. And right now, the curators, the general curators, are not the people in radio. They're other fans and also algorithms. You know what I'm saying? So basically, the algorithm is, if you like this, then you'll like this. They miss it, though. So I think curators are needed. I think there needs to be people like you. There needs to be people like me, and not just me, and others, because there's people that turn me on to stuff. I'd like to think I know a lot what's going on, but man, there's other blogs out there. Like, there's like Sound on the Sound. There's SSG Music. I look to them sometimes to see what's happening, because there's so much stuff. There's a lot of great stuff that sometimes I rely on people who I respect to turn me on to certain artists. And so that's what's needed. And that's what I think, you know, that's what I try to do in some small ways, small C, is be a curator and say, hey, you should listen to this. And this is why you should listen to this. It's really good. I think that's needed. But
it's so much great talent, but it's going to take quite a bit of us to get the word out, because it's not like there's five people who got all the talent. There's hundreds of kids out there with fantastic talent, and it's going to take, you know, you're going to have to hear some of them. I'm going to have to hear some of them. Sound on the Sound's going to have to hear some of them. I mean, as collectively, it's up to us to kind of get that word out.
You know, I mean, always say this ad nauseum, trying to cover music in this region in the Northwest is like trying to drink water from a fire hose. And you could take, you know, Seattle Music Insider, Sound on the Sound, SSG, Gorilla Candy, you know, the mainstream media, Three Imaginary Girls, and all these great folks covering music and doing it really well, and put them under one roof, and they still wouldn't be able to cover it all, because there's just so much. I mean, there's stuff out there I haven't even heard yet. I've got stacks of CDs I haven't even listened to yet. And so my challenge sometimes is just carving out the time to sit and listen to some of this stuff. So, you know, I rely a lot on word of mouth from people that I respect. And then sometimes I just block out time and just sit and listen to it. Or sometimes I'll just be kind of out on Facebook or whatever, and I'll hear something that'll catch my ear. And, oh, I dig that. And I'll jump on email and try to get in touch with that artist to see if I can interview him. But tons of stuff.
tons of stuff. I mean, I'm the same way, you know. People are sending me MP3s, and the other night I think I listened to music for hours and hours. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because there is so much out there, and I would like to, you know, cover as much as I could of the good stuff. But the same thing, I rely on you and other people and to kind of, you know, help me out and get through the filter. I mean, we could just go on and on. A'Ron Jones, Jake Nannery. There's just on and on and on of such good music. And then there's music outside of Seattle that I like too. You know,
Portland's great.
I just heard some guys today called the Abbott Brothers or something from North Carolina, and they were fantastic. And
I mean, a lot of good stuff. Yeah.
There's a lot of great music. I mean, if you love music, there's no better time to be a music lover.
We get contacted, I mean, because we have relationships with PR companies in different cities. So we get contacted by folks like Good Cop PR and who are representing bands. So when they come to town, they contact us and say, hey, you want to come cover a band. And one artist that I covered about 2 to 3 weeks ago, and I interviewed, and the interview will actually run on my show probably the next week or so, was an artist called Nikki Bloom and the Gramblers. And Nikki Bloom and the Gramblers, she's out of Southern California, or Northern California, rather. And they had a viral video that hit over 1 million people, and basically what they did was while they're on tour, they're sitting in a car doing a cappella versions of Hall & Oates, I Can't Go For That, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But just for fun. But their music has got this really classic kind of Southern California, early 70s, Laurel Canyon, you know, Linda Ronstadt, Eagles, rock kind of a sound, you know? Like you, that's a band you would have heard at the Troubadour in 1972 or 73, but they're doing it, you know, their own way, and they're new, they're modern, you know? It's really cool.
Let's talk about the living room shows, because I know that you've been covering living room shows. I don't know that everybody out there understands, because I don't understand what a living room show is, but it's really hot in Seattle right now.
Yeah, it is.
And I have really no idea what it is.
My dear friends, Kristen and Carrie Watt, two sisters, and they've been doing this almost 5 years, and they book these shows, and they book them either in living rooms, and they get some really great bands, and they book them in living rooms, and you have to get on the list, and if the list fills up, you're out of luck, and you get on the list, and you show up, and you see a great band in a living room environment. And you get to have some snacks, and you get to mingle with other music lovers, and it's a very intimate environment. What's nice about it is it's about the music and the audience. There's no separation. There's no stage. There's no big light show. And people are there to focus on the music. You don't hear a lot of clinging glasses and people talking in the background. Once the music starts, that's it. It's quiet. You can hear a pin drop. Now, they have been expanding into bigger rooms because they're getting very popular. So last night at the Piranha Shop, they had Lamolo. And the other thing that they've been doing, and they're partners of mine, is they've been streaming these shows via Melodic Caring Project, who's another organization and a partner of ours. So Seattle Living Room books the show, puts on the show. Melodic Caring Project streams the show to children in the hospital that are battling cancer that can't go out and see live music. And then I interview the artists off camera, sometimes on camera as well. And there are these amazing shows, and they get streamed to children, and then the videos of the shows are available afterwards. But they've booked some amazing bands. Ivan and Alyosha did a show back in January with Campfire OK, Mary Lambert, who recently worked with, you know, was on Macklemore's album, and also Star Anna was there all on one night. And it was streamed to children in the hospital. Pretty cool. Last night was Lamolo, and the cool thing is Lamolo played, and I've seen them, you know, Capitol Hill Block Party. They played sold out shows at the Triple Door, and they opened for Alan Stone back in December, and they're getting ready. Like literally, they did a show last night, and then at 10 o'clock this morning, they jumped in a van to head to Austin for South by Southwest, where they're going to be there with a ton of bands from the Northwest. But anyway, they're great shows.
There's actually going to be quite a few musicians from the Northwest at South by Southwest, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you who's going to be there. This is amazing. Okay, so Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, Ivan and Alyosha, Alan Stone, Pickwick, who I think this year Pickwick is going to break out. They've got a new record coming out tomorrow. I think they're going to be a huge year. They're brilliant. I've seen them live several times. I've seen them at Bumper Shoot Sasquatch. And there's a band called Chaos, who used to be called Smoosh. Now, they're from here, but they live also in Brooklyn. So they split time between Brooklyn, and they're two sisters. And they've had some success as Smoosh when they were kind of a younger act, but they've rebranded, and they're called Chaos. They'll be there. There's a band called Barcelona. I've seen them. They're absolutely brilliant. Kimya Dawson, Hey Marseille, who just put out a new record. They're going to be there. A band called Kitchen. I mentioned Lamolo already. Ravenna Woods, who's almost like a folk, punk, edgy, acoustic group, and they're amazing. I've seen them. Rocky Vadalato, Rose Windows, who's getting a huge buzz right now. The Flavor Blue. And then also there are several artists from the Critical Sun label, and I actually interviewed most of them last week for my radio show. So you've got Sightseer, Furniture Girls, Darius Wilrich, In Cahoots, Ghost Tribe, Byers, Rob Marcus, and Yusuf. They're going to be down there too. And I know there's others I'm missing, but that's a pretty strong representation from Seattle at South by Southwest, and all these bands are all amazing. And I think, I also have to mention Deep Sea Diver. I think they're going to be there as well. But they're another band I think that's going to break out. And they feature this amazing guitarist, Jessica Dobson, who recently toured with The Shins. So some really, really great stuff. And I think anybody who wants to get Seattle music in terms of what's happening, they go check out these bands. They'll get a really nice representation in terms of what's going on in Seattle right now.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of seeing Sightseer and Furniture Girls. Very, very talented. Both of those acts are just very talented. In fact, I think it was the lead singer from the Furniture Girls. She sang with Sightseer on one of the songs. And, I mean, it was amazing. It was like stadium quality stuff. I was that was hot.
Well, yeah, and you know, members of Sightseer, the guitarist plays with Furniture Girls, so he kind of does double duty. But yeah, Stacey's got an amazing voice, and Paige Matheson from Sightseer, equally powerhouse vocalist, and they put on a fantastic show. But absolutely brilliant, brilliant representation from Seattle, and all very eclectic too. I mean, if you look at that list or listen to that list, there's something for everybody in that list.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Sure.
And that's what's so great, and that's what's been so rewarding, I guess, for me, is to, you know, cover the scene. I'm not just into covering that the music scene, but a lot of what I do is that, because it's just been such a rewarding part for me. I just kind of try to cover people that I'm attracted to, you know, I mean, like on a soul to soul, like I really feel like that music is like the universal language that every soul speaks. And so that we kind of connect on that level. But then, and I also, you know, go off if I see someone on TV that I think, yeah, like, wow, that person just sounds great. I bring them on too. But I really do get excited about the Seattle scene, and I'm really excited about getting that out. But a lot of my interviews aren't solely on Seattle. But I love what's happening in Seattle. And as somebody who is an outsider looking in, I get it. I see what's going on, and that's been really great to witness that and be a part of it and to see kind of how the musicians are, I really think, in Seattle, kind of leading the way. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say, no, you're right. You just nailed it. I mean, and I'm like you. I mean, our bread and butter, 80% are artists from the Northwest, not just Seattle, but the Northwest. But we also cover artists that come to or through the Northwest as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the bar is really high here. I think the talent pool is huge in terms of really great musicianship, great songwriting, great producers. There's some great recording studios here, and I think what that does, it creates this synergy and it challenges the other artists. So if you're surrounded by great people, then it's going to challenge you to up your game. And, you know, back in the day, you know, you had, you know, Hendrix and Clapton and Jimmy Page, you know, and Zeppelin, all those guys would go to each other's shows. And you know that not only were they admiring what each other were doing, they were also, there was some friendly competition there. And people raising the bar for themselves. You go see some good cats play. You know what you want to do when you're done is you want to go home and practice and get better.
Right,
right. You want to be in that category in terms of quality. And so that's what I think is great in Seattle. Everybody just kind of pushes everybody. And you know, you were talking about Andrew Jocelyn. Well, Andrew Jocelyn's played with everybody, man. I mean, he's played with Allen. He's played with Macklemore. He's played with Ivan and Alyosha. He was on Chris Orlowski's record. He played on Everyday Jones' record. And people want to work with that cat because not only is he good and he's a good guy, but he just brings something incredible to whoever he works with. And so he is a genius. He is.
And
he
a
and
nice
the Passenger String Quartet.
Yeah. He is like the nicest person. I mean, I feel like a completely, like, mean person in the energy of Andrew Jocelyn. That's how nice he is. And I'm about as nice as you could be. And he makes me not feel as nice because he's just a genuinely good guy. I mean, he just wants good things to happen for Andrew Jocelyn.
Right.
And on top of that, he's just a musical genius on top of everything else. But, I mean, there's a lot of musical geniuses who aren't great guys. Andrew Jocelyn's the real deal. He's just a great guy.
He is. And you know who else is a great guy? And you've talked to him, Alan Stone. Alan is one of the nicest guys in this business, and he's having some amazing things happen to him. But I'll tell you what, man, every time I run into him, he just gives me the biggest hug, and he's just so much appreciative of the fans and people that support him and what's happening. And he works hard, but he is just the humblest, most humble, down-to-earth guy that you'll want to meet. And those are the kind of guys or artists that you want to see be successful. The ones that are truly artists, and the ones that really value their success and value their fans. And Macklemore is the same way. He's a good guy. You know, they're all that's the thing that I think is really cool is that we've got some talented people. But I can honestly say that through this journey that I've been on, almost every single person that I've met is just absolutely lovely, and that's what makes it fun. Because honestly, I don't care how good of a musician you are, and I've covered, you know, I've met Stevie Wonder, I've talked to Roger Daltrey. I mean, I've covered some pretty, you know, big folks that have done some pretty amazing things, and they're all good guys too. So I'm not really that impressed or starstruck if I meet somebody that's necessarily famous. I'm always in awe of the artistry, and I'm always in awe of somebody, and it doesn't matter whether they've sold. You know, they've sold a million records, gotten a Grammy. I am just as much in admiration for somebody like an Andrew Jocelyn or an Alan Stone as I am if I met a classic rocker. And I've interviewed, you know, some pretty interesting folks and met some interesting folks in my journey. So it's about the artistry for me. And so I don't really have the time or the patience for somebody if they're an egotistical jerk and they think they're bigger than the music. Because nothing, no one, no individual is bigger than the music itself. I don't have an interest. So I feel very blessed in the folks that I've covered. Everybody, and honestly, I can honestly say everybody that I've had a chance to interview has just been wonderful and lovely, and that's what makes it a lot of fun.
Definitely, and that's one thing I can 100% agree with you on. And I have said this on the show so many times. I'll tell people, now, this is another nice person. You probably don't believe me, but I feel like I've just fallen into the nice person hole because it's just been one great person after another.
Yeah.
And I don't know if, like, being in L.A., and, you know, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of really great people in L.A., but it's all about, in L.A., you really have to put the best face forward. I mean, you have to be promoting yourself all the time. And so sometimes people kind of get caught up on that and not being the real self because you're into the promote and promote and promote and promote. So people kind of get lost in there. So it's not to say that they're nice people. It's just to say that that they're so self-absorbed into pushing their career forward that you lose sight of who they really are. But in Seattle, I've been able to see that people still are in touch with that. You really get to see them. You really get to experience who they are, what they like, what turns them on, what music. Like I said, when they're coming out and they're supporting everybody. Mason Williams, when I talked to him, we were talking about the artist pushing artists. You know, I asked him, how did he write Classical Gas? And he said, you know, that he was on tour with a bunch of musicians, and every night after the show, they would pass the guitar around, and all the guitars or all the musicians would play something really hot. And he didn't have anything to play, and he was embarrassed. And so he said he thought, when they pass me that guitar again, the next time I'm going to have something to play, and I'm going to go home and I'm going to write something, and just so that I won't be embarrassed when they pass me that guitar. And he goes, anyway, it's Classical Gas, which ends up being, like, the greatest, you know, like, acoustic or electric guitar or acoustic guitar of all time, wins a zillion Grammys, blah, blah, blah. But it was artists pushing artists, but he's a nice person. He was with other, you know, these other great artists who were kind of bringing out the best in him. And I kind of feel like that's what's going on in Seattle as well. Alan White's super, super nice guy. Where else in the world could you
Isn't
sit down and talk to Alan White?
God, man, I love Alan. And you, I know you recently interviewed him. Alan, I mean, you know, he is, you get past the fact that he's like this amazing drummer, and he's just such a lovely man, and Gigi, his wife. But, you know, I still have to pinch myself because I go, man, that dude sat in a room with John Lennon and played drums on Instant Karma and played on Imagine, and basically John Lennon told him at the age of 20, hey, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. I like it. And let him do whatever he wants.
Exactly.
And he's also drummed with a lot of cats. And, of course, you know, he's drummed with one of my favorite bands, yes. But Alan is God, just a wonderful guy. And he lives up here, obviously. And just an amazing musician, to say the least. I got to tell you a little story. So John Anderson's in town last year doing a solo show. And John's not out touring with Yes because he can't do these big, long tours. But Alan came out with Gigi to watch John. And Alan sat, and Gigi sat next to Jennifer and I. And it was really fun and kind of surreal, too, watching John. And I had interviewed John a week prior via phone. But watching Alan watching John, because they had written some beautiful songs together. And John actually mentioned one of the songs they wrote called Turn of the Century and actually told the story of when he and Alan wrote it and gave Alan a shout out in the audience. And Alan, you know, was watching John perform this song acoustic that they had written together at one time, and just, you know, his eyes teared up. And it was just really beautiful. But it was really interesting because normally when I've seen Alan White and John Anderson, they're on the same stage together playing. So it was really interesting watching John and then watching Alan watch John. It was beautiful.
I bet. Yeah. Oh, I bet. Yeah, he's just a great soul is Alan White, and I really hope that came with it. In fact, the Alan White and Roger Fisher interview that I did, thanks to you, you hooked me up on that, and I really appreciate that. That was my biggest live show ever listened to was those two. And
cool.
I've gone to Roger's birthday party, and I told him about that, and I gave him the numbers on it. He was actually impressed. I was impressed. You know, I'm like, wow.
That's cool.
But they still draw a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And that came through. Now, my highest show ever just happens to be Robert Knight, who he had just one bam. You know, he's that big rock and roll photographer. He's the first one to photograph Hendrix. He just come off tour with Aerosmith, and he didn't have to go in the pit with all the other photographers. He was on, actually got to be on the stage, and Aerosmith just gave him carte blanche. I mean, photograph them any way he wanted. But anyway, he told so many ridiculous stories. I mean, I couldn't even get them all on tape, you know. And people love that
Alan,
kind of stuff. And Alan, he was just like that too, just one story after another.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love hearing those stories because that's stuff you don't read in Rolling Stone, you know. And they're real. You know, they're real. They're real authentic experience, not coming from a standpoint of a journalist, but actually coming from somebody from a human standpoint. And Alan's, you know, what an amazing journey he's on. He's been on and still is on.
Well, I have to tell you this that he talked about on the show, Robert Knight. He had been in Seattle. He's friends with Alan as well, but he was telling me about how he stays at the Edgewater Hotel. Well, I've never stayed at the Edgewater. I always usually stay at Inn at the Market.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He starts telling me this story, and he's like, oh, no, you really need to stay at the Edgewater, blah, blah, blah. And he starts telling me, he goes, I was with Led Zeppelin, and he starts going on and on about this mudfish story, you know,
right.
And I hadn't heard it, but evidently it's like classic rock lore. Okay, so he's like going off telling me this story, but I'm smart enough to know that he's on to something. So, you know, I'm really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells that story. Tells it all as fact. He was there, blah, 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 da, da, da. He goes all into the whole thing. If you want to listen to it, it's on to me. If anyone wants to go back and listen to it,
I'm a fan.
But anyway.
Now,
But so he starts going on and telling this story. So about a few nights later, I'm watching TV. Anthony Bourdain does that layover thing in Seattle, okay? So Anthony Bourdain, the Travel Channel layover in Seattle. So it's this whole Seattle show, Anthony Bourdain. Anthony Bourdain staying at the Edgewater. So Anthony Bourdain starts going on about the Led Zeppelin mudfish. He goes, you know, this is like rock rumor. Nobody knows if it really
urban
happened
legend.
Or not, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, urban legend, right.
Yeah.
And so I'm freaking out because I've just had this guy on my show like 2 days before, and he's like firsthand telling the story the way it goes down, you know. And I just like start freaking out. So I contact Anthony Bourdain. I'm like, no, that is not, you know, a legend, that is not a rumor. I just had Robert Knight on the show, and he just told the whole thing. He was there when this whole thing went down, and blah, blah. Anyway, he actually sends me a thing back saying that he was going to listen to that show because he was really interested in that. So then last week or 2 weeks ago, I stayed at the Edgewater when I went over for Roger Fisher's birthday, and I stayed at the Edgewater, and it brought the whole place to life for me because I just had this experience, thank goodness, through Robert M. Knight, and his experience made the whole Edgewater. I don't like telling everybody who will listen, people who don't even know me. I'm in the elevator. You won't believe this, but blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm telling all these people all this stuff. But another thing about Robert M. Knight, which you'll find interesting, is that I told him about Caspian because he's doing this whole child guitar rocker thing with Guitar Center, and they're going to do this like rockumentary, and Caspian really needs to be on that. But I told them, but I don't know how far it went. You know, I probably don't hold a lot of weight, but really Caspian should follow up on that, or somebody should follow up on that. I mean, Alan knows Robert. Maybe he should tell him about Caspian. Somebody needs to tell him about Caspian because he should be part of that rockumentary thing for sure.
No doubt. Yeah, Edgewater, I mean, think, you know, the Beatles, you know, the history when the Beatles came and stayed there. I mean, it's just, it's crazy that place.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the photos, you know, from it are just iconic.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's a classic place. I mean, I usually say it in the market, which I really love in at the market, so I don't want to say anything bad about them because I really do love in at the market. But it's a completely different experience in at the market versus the Edgewater. So the Edgewater is really like hip rock and roll. It's but in a quiet way, but in a quiet way. So, but anyway, so but Greg, this time just flew by. We need to do this again.
No, it was my pleasure. It was fun.
No, yeah, you know, we definitely need to go through this again. We didn't even really cover all of it. I'm going to go off today with let's go off with Limits, and that's Fame Riot, right?
Yeah. Another band that I think is going to have a big year. I think they're destined for greatness for sure.
All right, we're going to go off with Limits. This is the Fame Riot. They're another Seattle band. And, Greg, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Thanks for all that you've done for me. And I'll be seeing you soon, hopefully in Seattle. But I would really like to do this again one Sunday.
My pleasure. Anytime. You know, it's funny. I forgot that we were on the radio. It was just fun talking to you. It's like, oh, yeah, we're doing a radio show here. So, no, it was great. Thank you. You're awesome. I love your show. And definitely let us know when it's out, and we'll make sure I spread the word and tell everybody about it.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye. All right. We're going to listen to the Fame Riot, and they have a song called Limits, and we're going to listen to that, and then I will be right back. limits. So you can go to fameriot.com if you want to find out any information about the Fame Riot. And we certainly appreciate Greg Roth from Seattle Music Insider coming on and talking to us about the Seattle music scene. And you can follow Greg on Twitter at SMI Music, I believe, and but you can go to SeattleMusicInsider.com. You can find out everything you want to know about Greg. And as you can see, Greg was just a great guy. But right now we're going to switch gears a little bit. I have Jen from Chick Chat Chicago on. She has a huge event coming up in Chicago. I went to the same event, but in Seattle. And it was for 50 Shades of Grey fans. It was a fantastic party. I can only imagine what Chicago is going to do because Chicago does everything bigger and better usually. But I had a great time in Seattle at the 50 Shades Soiree. And Jen's going to come on and tell us about what they're going to be doing in Chicago on March 22nd. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
No problem. So tell us about what's going to be happening on the 22nd of March.
So Chick Chat Chicago is hosting our 50 Shades of Grey soiree on Friday, March 22nd at Prairie Productions, which is 1314 West Randolph Street. It's in the West Loop area of Chicago. We're having a sexy, swanky soiree celebrating all things 50 Shades of Grey. There's cocktails included that are sponsored by Chateau St. Michel, as well as Tito's Handmade Vodka. We're going to have hors d'oeuvres and mouthwatering desserts. We even have Fletcher Jones Audi is going to be on site with an Audi R8, which is Christian Grey's, for those who have read the book. It is Christian Grey's vehicle of choice. So we'll have one of those on site for guests to kind of take pictures and pose in. It's going to be really overall just a really swanky cocktail party. It's our first foray into co-ed. So girls, guys are all welcome, singles, married, boyfriends, girlfriends. We're welcoming everybody and hoping to get some more interest in the event as we're leading up to the next 10 days here leading up to the event.
How do people get tickets or get further information?
So you can get all of the information through our Eventbrite page, which is www.50shadeschicago, and that's 50shadeschicago.eventbrite.com. That has all of the details of the event. It has the ability to purchase tickets. We're also offering a swag bag ticket, which is filled with amazing 50 Shades goodies, as well as a local Chicago female designer, Lauren Lean, is making a special 50 Shades of Grey infinity scarf that's going to be included in the swag bag ticket. So we're very excited to have lots of great sponsors, partners on board for these swag bags, and we're only offering 50 to the first 50 to purchase those tickets.
Okay.
And again, that's www.50shadeschicago.eventbrite.com.
Are you on Facebook or Twitter?
We are also on Facebook. If you go to Chick Chat Chicago, you'll find all of the links to the event page. You'll find out more information about what we do here in Chicago for Chick Chat. We hold events, most of our events, as I mentioned, this is our first co-ed event. So most of our events are very female-driven, always fun with a social twist, but bringing women together to network and really truly support and empower each other. So it's a great group of women that we have here in Chicago with over 2,000 members so far.
Wow. So the Chit Chat, it just isn't 50 Shades. You guys do other things as well.
We do. We do. We hold all different types of diverse events. We do. We just started doing Chick Fit events, which are events where we partner with local women-owned fitness studios, and we bring women in to try out a fitness class, and then afterwards they sweat it out, and then we enjoy a little networking and mingling with a glass of wine and maybe a little shopping or fitness. We do fitness presentations, Q&As, and things like that. We do events that are more business-oriented where we'll bring in a speaker panel that leading women around Chicago. So we do a wide variety of events around the city.
And so, but your big thing is going to be the 50 Shades, which of course interests me because I am a Team 50 person, but I really like that whole Chick Chat society kind of group that you have going on that does other things. I know in Seattle they work out together, they go to movies and that type of thing. It's a really great idea for women. It's kind of women helping women. I think a lot of times women aren't the biggest cheerleaders for other women, and that kind of seems like what this is. It's celebrating women together.
Absolutely, you hit it right on the head. It's a great, it's a fantastic organization to be a part of. I always say, whether you're looking to further your career or if you're just looking for a friend, our events are very conducive to finding the women that have like-minded interests and things of that sort. So I encourage you to check us out and check out our 50 Shades of Grey soiree on March 22nd.
Did you read 50 Shades of Grey?
I have, yes.
Me too.
I read that all three books in probably about a month, so which was a feat for me because I'm not an avid reader. So, but very catchy. We're doing a lot of fun stuff for this event that throughout the night we'll have little. If you've read the books, you'll see touches with throughout the event that will remind you of portions of the book. If you haven't read the book, it'll just be a fun night out to enjoy with friends. It might even inspire you to read the books.
If you haven't read the book, shame on you, because that was a fantastic. I read all three of those books probably. Of course, I really am not the person listening to it because I was, like, obsessed with them. And I'm not a reader either. I just do not read. But it was going on, and so I thought, well, you know, I might want to have some of these people on the show, so I should read the book. I will tell you, I've never been so obsessed with something in my whole life as those darn 50 Shades books. And I have to literally will myself not to go back all the time and reread them because it's unhealthy. It's just, we were so good. I've been on other people's radio shows to talk about 50 Shades because I read them so much. It's embarrassing almost, except for I just love them. And then I went to that 50 Shades soiree in Seattle, and it was so great to people watch, for one thing. And it just really did tap into the spirit of the books. Everybody was having a great time. And I will say, people were just dressed. It was so beautifully. It's just it was just amazing to watch. So
I do encourage Dress to Impress. It's definitely I've been getting random emails about the dress code, and the dress code is cocktail. So cocktail dresses or longer gowns. I should mention now that you're bringing up the book is for those of you who have read the book, we will have a red room at the event. It's a private room. For those who have read the book, they know what the red room is. And it's sponsored by Early to Bed, which is an adult store here in Chicago. Again, another woman-owned adult store. And so she is setting up the red room in a private manner at the event, and we're also partnering with Vaudzilla, who is a local burlesque company, and they're going to be doing two performances that are themed to the 50 Shades of Grey theme. So it's going to be really exciting.
It was a great party in Seattle, so I can only imagine in Chicago. But everybody was there to have a good time. Everyone was very friendly. The common theme, obviously, that people had in common right off the bat was 50 Shades of Grey, so you didn't really feel like that you were amongst a bunch of strangers because everybody was connected through the book. So everybody wanted to talk about it and, you know, and what their favorite part was and this and that. And so it was really welcoming, the event that I went to. And I met some great people there, and everybody was just having a wonderful time. It wasn't like in a – because everybody always goes to the cheap, tawdry side of 50 Shades of Grey. Whenever people who didn't really read the book, they always want to go to the negative part. It wasn't like that at all, and of course 50 Shades, in my opinion, isn't like that at all either, and this party wasn't like that at all. It was very, very classy, just people having a great time, and, you know, just celebrating being out on a Friday night.
Absolutely. So I think that's a really good point that you make. We, because of the nature of what Chick Chat is all about, these events are very, very classy, very tasteful. We're not trying to toe the line, and cross that line. So this is going to be really an excuse to, get dressed up, grab your friends, grab a date, whoever it might be, come meet a date, and really just enjoy a night out, have a few cocktails, and just be entertained. So I really appreciate it, and I'll give the website one more time. It's www.50shadeschicago.eventbrite.com.
Great. All right. Well, we'll have to follow up with you, and we have a 50 Shades of Grey 1 year later show that's going to be coming on in April. We have a lot of big guests coming on. Jennifer Troughton, who was mentioned in the book, she's become a really good friend of mine over the past year. I talk to Jennifer almost every day. She's going to come on the show. And, in fact, I just want to let people know you can go to jennifertroughton.com. She has the photo that was mentioned in 50 Shades of Grey, Raising the Ordinary to Extraordinary. She did a lithograph of that. You can go to her website and buy it. There's only 850 that were made. E.L. James has number 50. I have number 51. It's beautifully done. She did it just for 50 Shades of Grey fans. Plus, Jennifer Troughton is an amazing artist in her own right. She's just a world-renowned artist, and she did a reproduction of what was in Christian's office, and it's not even that expensive. It's like $200 or something. And I think every 50 Shader should have one in their home. But go to jennifertroughton.com. Go to Chick Chat Chicago, which is C-H-I-C-K-C-H-A-T is how you spell that. And you want to go to the Chicago branch to hear what's going on in Chicago. And there are other chapters around the country. Like I said, I've been to the one here in Seattle. Thank you, Jen, for coming on. We want to check back with you and see how it all went, and see how many 50 Shaders showed up, and if you got any new people to join your group.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, and I hope to see if you come after hearing this on the radio, make sure you say hello at the event to me.
Definitely, definitely. All right.
Thank you.
All right, have a good
day.
Rest of your day. All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, so that was Jen, and she runs the chapter of Chick Chat in Chicago. You should definitely check that out if you're in that area. It's going to be a great event. It was really fun. Let me tell you, just the people watch was absolutely amazing. That was worth the price of admission. Anyway, that's it for this show today. We're going to go out with one of the bands that Greg was telling us about, Pickwick, I think. Yeah, Pickwick, and this is their song, Hacienda Motel, and Greg was telling us about that. Again, we appreciate Greg for coming on. Check him out at SeattleMusicInsider.com. And this week we have Terry Brooks coming on. He is a New York Times bestselling author. We have Academy Award winner Patty Duke coming on. We have a band called Avalon Landing coming on. I have a 13-year-old singing sensation out of Colorado, Sophia Dion. We're going to talk to her. Next week, Randy Hansen and the Casper Coberly we were talking about. Many, many more. Georgette Jones, the daughter of country music legends George Jones and Tammy Wynette. Georgette will be on the show. Past shows, Alan White, amazing, fantastic, nice guy. Roger Fisher with Heart, Alan White with Yes. That's a crazy interview with Robert M. Knight. So many good ones for you guys to check out. Be sure to look at the shows on demand and then catch us up with new shows coming on. Again, we love nice people. If you know a nice person who would like to listen to the show, please forward it on to them. I certainly appreciate it. This is a show that's held together by rubber bands and duct tape and your support. So thank you very much, and I will see you soon. This is Hacienda Motel, and I will see ya on the next show.
The song's called Hacienda Motel.
revival in here. Jesus, someone's going to get healed.